Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is Valerie Gross, the president and CEO of the Howard County Library. But as always, we'd first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, what you got?
First off, we've got wine is in the news this week. Wine's a big issue in both Howard County and the statewide.
What a shock for you to want to start with wine.
Well, it is Friday, after all. I enjoy my glass of wine at the end of the day on Friday. Let's start with in Howard County. There is an attempt by it began with an initiative by the county executive to allow for some of our farms in the rural West to have wineries.
Sounds like a great idea.
Great concept. The devil is in the details, as they say. And the legislation has gone back and forth. And in its latest incarnation, some of those who are in favor of wineries say that the new law is too restrictive. Those opposed say it's not restrictive enough.
I mean, you mean the people that actually want the wineries actually want paved roads to get to them?
Well, paved roads to get to them. They want to be able to have events and sell their wine. Some of those opposed say,
"I'm aghast." Well,
you
are
can
you kidding me?
Yeah, you can have a winery, but you can't sell wine at the winery. Okay, you know what strikes me about this? I mean, this is local wine. Okay, this is not. I think people are afraid that all of a sudden Howard County is going to become like Sonoma Valley.
We could only hope. I mean, seriously. I mean,
yeah.
Are we really that worried about this?
It's not going to happen. I'll tell. They can rest assured that is not going to happen. In my not so humble opinion. But what was interesting, I actually went to the public hearing on this on Monday night, and for some reason, both those in favor of and those opposed started their testimony by saying, and without fail, well, I love wine. I mean, even those opposed, they felt like, I'm not against wine.
Does that qualify? I love wine, but.
But. And then, of course, on the state issue, keeping on the wine theme that we're starting with, finally, it looks like Maryland will allow people like you and I to have wine shipped directly to our home.
Legally.
Right. And we know.
Everyone's been doing it illegally.
Everybody's been doing it. And I think there are even some members of the legislature who have their wine shipped from a winery to offices in D.C., which allows it. And then they just bring it back across the line to Maryland. So we've had many wine scoff laws out there in our state. And hopefully they're beginning to get that straightened out. But here's what gets me. The biggest roadblock to getting a wine, any kind of direct wine shipping in Maryland has been the powerful state licensed beverage dealer association. It was a pretty strong lobby. And, of course, they're worried about underage drinking, which, of course, what kid's going to wait?
No, they're not. They're worried about losing sales.
They're worried about losing sales. So the compromise was with these folks, as I said, okay, you can order wine from wineries, but you can't order it from an out-of-state retailer. So that means no Wine of the Month Club or, some wineries are not like wineries. They're more like specialty wine dealers, and you won't be able to buy from them.
I know there are always issues that get under each of our respective skins. I don't mean just you and me. I mean people in general.
Yes.
But it just amazes me the energy and the time that our elected officials spend on such minutiae. I mean, is this really that big a deal? And to me, it's not.
Oh, my God.
So maybe I don't get it.
The public hearing on Monday night, I mean, it had to be an hour on testimony, on wineries.
Well, but the whole testimony concept, we can have this conversation another day. I think a lot of people feel like they want to be heard. And once they've shown up, even if the person right before them
said the same thing,
they need to be heard. I got a little twist.
And it's funny because Calvin Ball, the chair of the council, actually said that, if you hear somebody get up and say pretty much what you were going to say, and you just want to stand up and say, I agree with him, that's fine. We'll count it. No, nobody does that.
People love to be heard.
I give him credit for trying.
Michael's Pub.
Well, so while we're on
speaking of alcohol.
While we're on the
Michael's Pub, been around
controlled
in the Kingston Trivance Village Center since, 1986,
I think? 86, I believe
something
it was.
Like
yeah, mid-80s.
Been around for a lot of years. Is closing down. So another victim of the economy.
Well, yeah, and some say, of bad judgments. It's kind of an interesting story of Michael's.
You're talking about Shane Curtis, the owner?
Yeah. When he first, my name isn't Michael. When he first expanded, he expanded into adjacent space because of the smoking laws. He wanted to have a separate ventilated space. Because if you remember when Howard County first established no smoking, they allowed a bar to have a separately ventilated area. So that's why he took a space next door, put another bar in, and that was for smokers. Well, you know, he's probably the only public house I know of in Howard County did that. I mean, Clyde's just said, whatever, you know, you smoke outside.
Places like Bare Bones had a natural divide, and it worked out real nice.
It worked
for them.
Out, yeah. Right. Okay. But eventually what happened is they got rid of that allowance anyway. I mean, they said you couldn't even have a separately ventilated place. There was no smoking period, which was probably
so
smart.
You think he overextended himself, put too much money into something that really didn't have a future?
Yeah, I think that started the beginning of his problems, because that's a lot of leasehold improvements. You know, a separate bar, more plumbing, and it caught up with him. Another thing that happened, too, is with Michael's. When Michael's opened, I actually worked over in the Rivers Corporate Park area at that time, back in the mid-'80s. That was the place. That was the happy hour place for everybody after work, because there was nothing else. But now
there are a lot of other places.
You got Ram's Head down in Savage Mill, and you got Looney's up in Maple Lawn on either side of them. You know, it's going to
take Union Jack's down in Town Center.
Yeah, so you know, there's got more competition for that dollar. So it's always a sad passing of a long established
kind of an institution.
Yeah, you know, bars are part of our cultural makeup in our community. So sorry to see
you go again. There,
so, yeah, I know.
Mrs. America.
Yeah, you know, we talk about our cultural makeup. You know, a lot of people may not realize, but Howard County is now home to Mrs. America, Maryland's
Mrs. America, that's going on to national.
Yeah, to national
pageant.
Yeah.
Just another accolade for Howard County.
Another accolade.
We got two this week.
We got two this week. and this is, I forgot her first name.
April.
April Proudfoot. Yeah, I should say that. April, I'm sorry, April. We're friends on Facebook.
Nicely done.
Her husband, David, ran for school board.
It just shows you that it's a testament to the strong relationships that exist amongst people on Facebook.
On Facebook,
right?
Yeah.
She's my friend.
Actually, April's a very nice lady, and David is a wonderful guy. I'm sorry he didn't make it onto the school board, but I got to meet her when he was out campaigning. I didn't meet her until the campaign this fall, and it was shortly after the campaign's over that she's into this Mrs. America, too.
It is Mrs. America.
It's a pageant for married women.
For Mrs.'s.
Yeah, Mrs.'s.
Right.
Mrs.'s.
You know, it's funny, in reading this article, there were a couple things that struck me as funny. You know, the first, and I'll just quote, she says, I changed my diet and got to working out more and reading newspapers on a daily basis to be prepared for any interview questions that might come about current events.
Yeah.
You know, it's what struck me as funny. Miss America and Mrs. America, you think, are competitions to reward people that look good, that are well-poised, that are up to snuff on current events,
right,
can speak to current events. This isn't like you're supposed to study for this. You're supposed to fall into this role.
Right.
You're supposed to be that person. And then she says, you know, I didn't have a role model in my life as far as a strong woman was concerned, so I looked to the pageants to see what I should be like as I grew older. Is this really what we're trying to...
Now, again, I'm not going to beat up on April.
I don't even know April, but it just struck me as funny that, you know, here this is what we're putting up as the standard to which we're trying to aspire.
Well, you know, and a lot of the ladies like the pageants, and I give them credit. And actually, you know, she's come a long way with this. She beat out in her rise to being Miss Maryland of the Mrs. America pageant. She beat out Mrs. Annapolis, Mrs. Anne Arundel County, Mrs. Baltimore County, Mrs. Charles County, and Mrs. Ocean City. So way to go, April. And good luck. And I guess it's in April. The final pageant. April will...
How fortuitous.
How fortuitous.
You know, and she is very lucky that our guest today, Valerie Gross, didn't have the time to compete, because I think she would have gave her a run for her money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. No doubt about it. and speaking of accolades, Howard County got another one, right?
Yes, and County Executive Ken Allman's done a fine job in promoting it all week long.
I heard yesterday he mentioned it twice in one day.
And I happen to be at both events. But yeah.
What is it?
Well, Columbia, Maryland has been named one of the top 10 cities to date a nerd. Match.com, in this world of geekiness being sort of cool. I mean,
yeah,
it's cool to be a nerd these days.
Yeah,
I mean,
cool
with Mark
be
Zuckerberg being named Time Magazine Person of the Year, it's cool to be a nerd. So they decided to go out and find the top 10 cities with the highest educated Match.com members. and either in technical or educational occupations, and Columbia, Maryland ranked number 8.
Number 8?
Okay. We actually had Fairfax, Virginia, number 9, and Rockville, Maryland were number 10.
I always like it when we beat out Fairfax, you know. There's something about that, but I always have a kind of think they think they're the tech center of the world, but...
Well, and Sunnyvale, California was actually number 1, and there were actually several other California locations as well as some Massachusetts locations. But, you know, Maryland, Virginia area actually did pretty well.
Here's what they say. The nearby National Security Agency and Fort Meade Army Base account for more than 8,000 highly educated jobs that can be found in Columbia. On another nerdy note, the city takes its street names from famous works of art and literature. In 2010, Columbia was ranked number 2 in Money Magazine's list of the top 100 best places to live in the United States. We've heard that a lot, too.
When was that?
So anyway, yeah, so now we're, you know, I guess we're up for another year of Ken talking about what a great place we are for nerds.
But I got to tell you, he's quite entertaining now when he speaks. He can rattle all the accolades out in about 20 seconds, and it's almost like a disclaimer at the end of a commercial.
It's rather seamless.
You know, number 2, da-da-da-da-da, and he, you know, the library, and this and that, and whatever. He just rolls them out. Very impressive.
And then there's that. And while we're kind of on, well, nerds and bikes, they kind of go together. I mean, some...
No, they don't.
They do now. There's a group...
You get an A for effort on Segway, but that just didn't work.
The Mid-Atlantic Off-Road Enthusiast, acronym MOOR, have proposed to pay for and develop about a 1 acre, 5,000 square foot, mountain biking skills course in the Rockburn Park in Elkridge. Okay? They're going to pay for it. They're going to take care of it. The county parks think this is a wonderful thing. Well,
they're donating the land, right, this. And
Well, there's only one problem. They want to do it in Elkridge. You know, if there's one place in Howard County that has all the nutcases, has the greatest kind of combined concentration of nutcases,
it's... You got Belmont.
You got the Belmont people, you know, and it just seems like Elkridge has a disproportionate share of them.
And the concern is...
The concern is, well, first, the always first concern, parking. There's not enough parking. That's because people are going to the parks.
And they're riding their bikes.
So parking is number 1. And number 2, they're afraid that there'll be illicit drug use on a skills course. I'm having a hard time with that.
Dude, let's see if we can ride after shooting up.
Yeah, dude, let's get...
Come on.
Yeah, I know. Come on. What?
Look, kids are kids. Kids are going to engage in inappropriate behavior, whether it's drinking, whether it's sex, whether it's drugs. You know what? They're going to find a different venue. And I appreciate needing to make sure that we're trying to manage that and monitor it as much as possible. But we can't live our lives building around that.
Well, you know, it would think to me, if kids are going to do something illicit, they're going to go to a little more isolated spot in the park than a skills course where you got a bunch of people, you know, athletes and people really working on their skills.
I had these visions of these kids laying on the ground and these kids just jumping over them with these big bikes, you know. Whoa, did you see that?
This part of the skill course is called Jump the Stoner. I don't know. So, yeah, it just seems like, again, you know, a little bit of craziness, people fighting what is really a good thing. And one last point is that Howard County, actually, this is a great thing for the county and great thing for our tourism and economic development, because the nearby Patapsco State Park has been ranked by some people as some of the best mountain biking trails on the East Coast. So I think mountain biking is the kind of thing we ought to be encouraging in this county, and it's a great family activity, so I've said my piece on that.
So it would have been a segue to cover this story a little while ago, but we talked a few minutes ago about the time the legislature spend on issues that just seem just such a waste and colossal waste of time and money.
Legislating behavior.
Well, the Maryland, actually, the House Judiciary Committee took one of these up this week, and what I'm referring to is the... proposed legislation that would ban novelty lighters. Now, novelty lighters, for those of you that don't know, are lighters that look like soccer balls. They look like Pez containers.
Yeah, they look like little Pez containers.
They look like little toys. Yeah, okay, yeah, and they apparently have been pretty popular. So there's apparently legislation that has been proposed that would ban these.
Yeah. No, they're dangerous.
They're very dangerous, but regular ones are not.
No. Okay,
they're very safe.
Or matches are safe.
Yeah. And matches are safe.
Yeah, but novelty lighters, no.
You know what? I get that they look like toys. I get that they're more likely to be grabbed by kids. But you know what? Kids, little kids, especially little kids, they're going to play with anything they can get their hands on
right. That
they're not given. It doesn't matter whether it looks like a soccer ball or it looks like a regular Bic lighter.
Isn't it your job as a parent to say no?
Well, and that's just it. Why are we legislating the illegality of selling novelty lighters Where's the mom? Where's the dad?
You're right. No, you can't have that. That's a lighter.
God forbid if we smack their hand and send them to their room.
Well, it goes back to that that woman that was mad because her kid got thrown out of preschool because it hadn't been toilet trained. You know, it's not the government's job to raise
to
your kids.
Everything.
Right. Or to raise your kid. And that there's another stupid law that the legislature is considering. In Maryland, apparently, and I this isn't actually a new law. I did a little research on it. In Maryland, it's okay. You can have a doctor's permission to smoke marijuana, but you can't buy it. It's still illegal to buy it. But if you get caught with it and you have a doctor's note, it's only a $100 fine. But yet the rest of the state says, well, no, we don't want to legalize it in Maryland. We don't want to legalize anybody being able to buy it. But we'll say it's okay for your doctor to prescribe it.
So if you get caught buying it, I guess you can get arrested for that?
No. Well, once you have it in your possession, then
it's okay.
You got, as long as you got a doctor's note. Now the guy.
Now, what about selling
the
it?
Guy
the guy's selling it.
He's screwed. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
So it's not like if you bring that person your doctor's note, then he's off the hook.
It's like, again, it's like all of a sudden a halfway measure. You know, we're saying, well, I believe in medical marijuana, but let's not go too far with it. Anyway, final note. You know, up until our last show, I never heard of somebody called Annie Burton Bird. You know,
when I brought her up last time, you were like, who?
I never.
And I'm like, the story's coming.
Oh, my God. You know, and here we are 2 weeks later. Meltdown on the board at Domestic Violence Center. The whole board is out. County executive is appointing a new board, kind of setting a new precedent for government intervention into private groups, do you think? I mean, you had a little bit of...
Look, you and I had this debate over lunch. I appreciate the fact that here we've got this woman who clearly should not be heading such an important agency, or frankly, any agency. I completely agree on that point.
Yeah.
I also think that the board of directors of the Domestic Violence Center, which is a private organization but heavily funded by the county, did a miserable job vetting this person for this position.
Horrible.
So, lo and behold, this whole thing blows up. All these volunteer board members are like, oh, my God, what am I going to do now? And they start to resign. And basically, they've all said, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And by the way, this woman is still...
She's still running
the organization.
She's still running the organization.
So the county obviously got very concerned.
She doesn't think there's a problem.
She doesn't think there's a problem at all. And, you know, for the listeners, go look this woman up, and you're going to have your first and second and third page of Google with all kinds of lawsuits and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
County Executive Ullman stepped in and said, wait a minute, I'm not giving you guys money if you're going to allow this organization to be run by a woman who has been prevented on a federal level from managing money on any third party's behalf.
Right.
Because of all the things that she's engaged in. So I appreciate the fact that we need to come up with a mechanism to prevent the Domestic Violence Center from putting county funds into this woman's control. And clearly the board is disengaged at this point and doesn't really want to have anything to do with this. However, where I'm struggling, and I admit that I'm struggling because the practical solution is exactly what Ken Ullman did, which is come in and say, we're going to put in a new board.
Right.
I'm appointing a new board that's going to be a good steward of the dollars that we, the county, are donating to DVC. I'm troubled, as I was troubled with the Chamber of Commerce issue,
the Diane Wilson affair,
the Wilson Gate matter. I'm concerned about where's the line with county getting involved in private sector. And practically, I get why it happened the way it did. Fundamentally, I've got a problem with the county stepping in and appointing new members to a private organization's board.
Right.
How about reaching out? And I think the government could have been a facilitator to a solution, going to Leadership Howard County, going to the Baltimore County or Anne Arundel County Domestic Violence Center, getting them to run the organization for some period of time. I appreciate that what Ken Ullman did was the most expeditious and quickest way from point A to point B.
Yeah, again, we talked about continuity of service. But anyway, hopefully that organization will settle down now, get back to its mission, and we can put this episode behind us. And that leads us to...
Speaking of episodes...
Episode.
It is time to introduce our guest, Valerie Gross. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, Valerie.
Valerie is the president and CEO of the Howard County Library System. So, I understand you're from the West Coast.
Actually, I'm from the Midwest.
So you went Midwest to West to East.
Right.
Got it.
But we got San Francisco in here. Is that
yes. Lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for 15 years.
Now, whereabouts in the San Francisco Bay Area?
Always worked in the city. Lived in Antioch at first and then in Berkeley.
Oh, okay. Oh,
which has quite a few things in common with Howard County. People know or think that one person can change the world.
Yes,
and we all have passions,
yes.
And they certainly are there in Berkeley, and they're here in Howard County as well, which is wonderful.
I share some of that. I lived in Tiburon for a while.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so I know the San Francisco Bay Area very well. But how did you get from the Bay Area to here?
Well, my parents live in northern Indiana, and I had a wonderful job opportunity to be executive director of the Goshen Public Library. And my son, who at the time was in third, fourth, and fifth, we were in Indiana, he always said to me, why can't we live next to Grandma and Grandpa? And so I said, well, would you like to live next to Grandma and Grandpa? Figuratively speaking. And so we took the...
No one really wants to live that close.
But it was perfect because it was a great job opportunity. Moved into the public library arena. Most people are pegged and stay either in the academic world or in the public library arena or in the special business library arena, but I had the opportunity to move into the public. And then my son, when he was in third, fourth, and fifth grade, got to spend a lot of time with his grandparents, and that's the perfect age.
Oh.
Now,
okay.
You're actually a law school graduate.
Yes.
Okay. Now, was that before you got into the public library system?
Well, after I graduated, I actually have a master's in music, too, from the Conservatory of Music in San Francisco, which is what took us out to San Francisco. After that, I went to law school because I had gotten a job at a law firm, and I thought, well, I should know a little bit about law if I'm going to be heading up the research department. So I ended up going to law school, and
Did you ever practice?
No, I still am a member of the bar in California after all these years, just because I think it's fun to keep my bar.
Yeah, keep that up. Yeah.
I've not practiced with a law firm, but I've handled a few cases.
So let me get this straight. So you were working for a law firm, and you figured that I probably should be a lawyer if I'm going to work for a law. That's like saying I got to go to the doctor's office. Maybe I should get a medical degree.
That's not true. There are a lot of people that work at a doctor's office that aren't doctors.
Well, see, now with the plethora of materials on medical education in the health arena, you can come to Howard County Library and be almost as smart as the doctor that you're going to go visit.
I understand.
Not a lawyer. You absolutely have to go to a private law firm
in order
to get adequate legal assistance. You can't go to the Howard County Library.
If you can get all kinds of stuff on Google.
But you can always be your own real estate broker.
And then there's that.
Well, let's just say that I'm a firm believer in continuing education.
That's what
we deliver at Howard County Library, and I must lead by example in that regard.
Well, before we go on to the library, I mean, so you've got a master's in music as well.
I do.
And do you play an instrument?
Voice.
Oh, you sing.
She's going to sing to us before the day's out.
Wow. Very nice.
Off the air.
Excellent. Do you participate in any choirs around here, choruses, or...
There's no time at the moment.
Yeah.
Perhaps at some time in the future, I'll dive back in.
Yeah. That's right behind Mrs. Maryland.
You are most kind.
No, they don't have a talent contest for that. We read that.
All right, so you came out to Howard County, and you became immediately the head of the Howard County Library system?
And it's been the best job I've ever had. Been here about 10 years.
10 years, okay. Wow. Excellent.
It will be 10 years at the end of this fiscal year, so it seems like it's just flown by so quickly.
So you showed up, and they gave you your desk and your office, and they said, this is your library system. So what did you think?
I thought, what a great library system, and there was so much happening already, and I saw all kinds of possibilities, and the creative staff and the board that was supportive of things. We've just been visionaries in many ways, and we've taken some chances on some initiatives, and a lot of them have been incredibly successful and have really taken off nationally, and it's been great fun to be part of it all.
So walk us through some of the programs that you've actually instituted since you started and some of the successes you've had with those programs.
Well, initially it was the A-plus Partners in Education initiative. When I came, we at the Howard County Library System were already partnering individually with about 14 schools.
Uh-huh.
And I suggested that we consider making the partnership comprehensive and met with the then superintendent at the time. And
was that Michael Hickey back then? Or?
That was John
O'Rourke.
John O'Rourke, yes.
And he said, I'll do anything Paula Blake supports. So we met with Paula. And we then convened a committee over the course of a year. We developed the partnership, and it includes every single Howard County public school student gets a Howard County Library System card.
I can attest to that, yep.
Through school registration. No one else in the country does this.
Yeah, in elementary school.
Voter registration.
The concept is that it saves us time and that we don't have to do school drives anymore like many library systems
sure.
do. It's just part of the process. And then it connects the students with Howard County Library System at the beginning of their 12 years of required education. It connects them with that. We want to be viewed as adjunct faculty. And so we have kindergarten field trips to to the library now as part of the school curriculum.
Wow.
They're incredibly wonderful partners. Yeah, so it's actually your kindergartner comes to the library with a field trip, and they will have studied beforehand what they're going to find there, and they see the books, they see the computers, they learn about the classes that we teach, that we bring into the schools, that we teach there, the events that we hold, and then they get a mini little quiz when they get back to their classrooms about it. And so then they have connected us, and then we're in the schools a lot. Every branch, every school, rather, has a Howard County Library assigned A-plus branch and a person. So we can communicate regularly, and we take our A-plus curriculum into the school so that the teachers invite us, and we go and enhance their whatever they're teaching, and it's a joint effort.
Yeah. So has this program diminished the significance of media centers?
Oh, to the contrary, it is enhanced, because it is to make this partnership work, you have to have solid communication, and that is human connection. It is people. It is ideas that we're constantly making happen. I mean, I'll give you Battle of the Books as an example. 94 teams signed up for this. That's because of the way we work together with the media specialists, with the teachers, with the reading specialists, with everybody at the school system. It's unheard of, this kind of participation. Battle of the Books is taking place April 8th. It's a Friday evening, and we have 94 teams that we're accommodating. We had been told last year, after we had just a few too many people at Atherton High School, we said, of course, we'll comply with fire code next year.
Yeah, wow.
And so 94
teams. That's a good
teams,
problem to have, actually.
It required two schools, but it teams of five, that's 600 students reading 16 books.
Wow.
Outside of their curriculum. What they do is they get tested on these 16 books on a Friday night. 50 questions. And you get first, second, and third place winners. We also have first, second, and third best costume, first, second, and third best team name. The kids make up a team name, and they dress the part. So you'll have the Reading Warriors, or Pickerel's Page-Turning Penguins, and they look like penguins. Little Einsteins look like little
right.
Einsteins. The Wacky Tacky Readers. Oh, the Rock and Roller Derby Readers won best costume last year. I think Jim Roby was our best costume judge last year. He's again this year. And we had to make a rule, no moving shoes next year, because what they do is they come in and they parade all around the gym, Olympic style, to the crowd, and they've got fans in the crowd. And so, but my point is...
But no wheels anymore on the feet.
No more wheels. The point is, it is because of our solid communication with the school. It's this network that we're in education together, and the school system is part of our customer base. Our customer base is infants through the oldest, wisest person in the community. And the school system is our customer, and this is how we can best contribute to what this particular component of our customer base is.
So the relationship has been strengthened, but the physical books located... Are those still owned by the school system, and has that continued to grow, or are they more now referred to the library system for actual books?
Oh, it is both.
Okay,
it
great.
Is both. What we do is we complement with an E. Actually, we also complement with an I, what the school system does. But this notion that we bolster. It is an effective use of taxpayer money, because you've got the third graders studying leaves. Well, they can study from the leaves that particular school has. But if we know ahead of time, and the teachers do tell us this, we will summon all the leaves books that we have to the Glenwood branch if it's happening over there, and then the kids come. Or the Black Eyed Susan books is perhaps a better example. Maybe they've got 25 titles in the media center, and then they can choose from our hundreds of titles that we have, and we will summon those, make a display, and hold it. If everybody's studying World War II, we sometimes hold the books and have students use them in the branch, but the teachers will be sending us, they send us assignment alerts, so we're prepared. And then the kids will have seen us in their school, so they are not intimidated by us. In fact, they recognize us, and they think that we're their library teachers, really.
That's now, a great partnership.
You've done and marvelous things, and the Howard County Library System has won some national recognition for this stuff, right?
Well, we are nationally ranked among the great public library systems, and it really is because of our outstanding curriculum that is made possible because of a supportive board, because of a staff that truly is second to none, and because of the funding we receive. That's the county is 90% of our budget, and I absolutely must laud the friends of Howard County Library, because they make possible the frosting, the things that really make us shine, Battle of the Books.
I'm a friend of the library.
Are you a friend?
I have my little, you know what I love? I love the little bag you give away. I use that at my grocery store now.
The Chico bag.
The Chico bag. It is so cool.
And it looks so small, but it's really big.
I keep it on a keychain. I go into my because now we're gonna have a bag tax in Maryland. So it's really going to pay off having those little bags. Does everybody like those?
Loves them. I love my Chico bag.
But my only problem is when I became a friend of the library, I got one. But
you must have joined at a high level. Thank you so much.
Well, when I renew, I don't get another one.
Well, I'll bring that to the Friends board chair's attention. But the board's...
Paul is rolling his eyes.
The Friends board has grown...
I just want to understand why Valerie can't give away stuff with the same frequency that Vic Broccolino does.
I'll talk with Vic. The hospital, by the way, is a strong, strong supporter of Howard County Library System.
So you have a lot of strong supporters.
We thank Vic as well. Oh, yes. And Ascend One is our first presidential circle donor. That's at the $10,000 level.
Does he get a couple of bags in?
Yes. The Columbia Bank will...
It's all about the bags.
The Columbia Bank will be our next one. And perhaps, Paul, your law firm would like to become in that circle as well.
We'd be happy to consider that.
We actually...
You get a Chico bag. They're very cool.
I'm pretty sure you're going to abscond with it.
Actually, Paul, your law firm does support us quite generously, and thank you so much.
Oh, anyway.
Happy to do it. And then you also have a spelling bee, which has gotten a lot of accolades as well.
Yes, that just took place, and that is part of the A-plus partnership. That is one of our favorite signature events. 62 schools participated this year, and the winner of this bee advances to the nationals. We actually created the avenue for Howard County students to be able to represent Howard County
at the
national level.
That's great.
BB&T sponsors that, and it's absolutely wonderful every year. And we also have a companion Bumblebee, which is for grades 1 through 3. The spelling bee is for grades 4 through 8. The Bumblebee is sponsored by the Rotary Clubs, and it is for grades 1 through 3, and we just give these wonderful, cute kids an opportunity to come and get their trophy.
Everybody gets a prize, right?
They hold bumblebees at their school, so everybody gets a trophy, and it's sometimes the first time that they've shaken hands, and Calvin Ball, chair of the county council, was there this year, as was the chair of the Board of Education, Janet Siddiqui.
He's one of my favorite bumblebees.
He's wonderful, yeah. But one child went home last year and said to his parents, "Am I famous now?"
Yeah.
And we, of course, said, Of course you are.
Of course you are. Listen, before we run out of time, a lot of things are happening in the library. You've got a brand new facility nearing. I drove by it last night.
Yes, we
hope to
hope to open in December of this year.
Well,
this is the new, the Charles E. Miller Branch and Historical Center. It will be a new branch that is about three times the size of the current Miller Branch, and we will bring a renewed focus to history education in the county and also heighten science education, health education, and environmental education, especially with the Enchanted Garden that will be opened in the spring of 2012. It's a quarter-acre parcel. It will be a fantastical experience for children and adults alike.
Now, the Historical Society is going to move out of their church digs in Ellicott City?
We are partnering with them. They will be residing in a portion of the upper place, and so as you ascend the stairs, you get to the top of the stairs, and it is the Historical Center, which is a combined reading and research room with the Historical Society. We'll have an entrance. It's sort of an exhibit area at the top of the stairs. So it is prominently located on the second floor. It's the Historical Center, shared space between our history collection and the Historical Societies. And also, we will partner with all of the historical associations in the county.
Wow.
That sounds great. As you're building this new facility that's three times as big, I can't help but wonder, what is the future of libraries?
Yeah.
With 50% of books now being sold electronically.
We have e-readers. We have 60 e-readers. Don't know if you'd like to get in line. There are about 500 people on the wait list for those, but that's certainly the wave of the future.
That's a partnership with Barnes & Noble that you did, right?
Partnership with Barnes & Noble, and also the Friends gave us some seed money for this pilot initiative.
But now it's been like you've got 500 people on the waiting list. That's too much response.
It is indeed, and we are looking to expand that and see how we might do that.
Do you reach out to Amazon with Kindle?
Kindle does not support the OverDrive collection that we have. Right now, we have two ways that you can borrow an ebook. You can borrow our Nook with a preloaded series of New York Times bestsellers, or you can bring in your Nook or your Sony e-reader, and you can download one of our ebooks in our collection on yours, or you could actually do it.
So if I already have my own Nook, I can get it. I can get Nookie at the library.
That is absolutely correct.
You can get Nookie at the library, but sometimes you have to wait in line.
And we have a cheat sheet on how to download audiobooks and ebooks to your e-readers. But it doesn't matter what happens to the book, and here's why. Our educational mission is to deliver high-quality public education to all ages in Howard County, in the region, and in the state of Maryland. And in order to do that, we have a curriculum that comprises three pillars that are timeless. The first pillar is self-directed education. That includes books. Again, doesn't matter what the medium is, how it works. It includes online research materials, anything you need electronically in print that our experts make available to you. The second pillar is research assistance and instruction. Those are our instructors, our research specialists assist you individually with your research needs, because even though you might find everything you need on Google, you still might have something a little bit more complicated that you need some help on. And that same pillar includes our classes that we teach for all ages in the library, and we take into the schools through A+. The third pillar is instructive and enlightening experiences. It's like the spelling bee. It's like Battle of the Books.
Instructive,
it's like,
and enlightening.
She's talked about her three pillars before, I can tell.
It's like Alexander McCall Smith
like
is
a
coming.
Three-legged stool.
April 10.
Alexander McCall Smith?
Exemplifying the third pillar of our educational mission. The Alexander McCall Smith is coming to Howard County. 300 seats. We sold out, quote unquote, because equal opportunity in education is what we're all about. We're not charging for it, in a day and a half.
Wow.
So we can accommodate another 200 to 300 people. Standing room only. If you'd like to get in line, we have worked out with the author to do a simulcast in the 50 Plus Center, so we'll have 150 additional seats plus standing room only. So we think we can accommodate an audience of at least 500, if not 6.
Will there come a point where you may want to move that to the Jim Rouse Theater or something? Once you start getting these, do they always have to be at the library? I mean, sometimes you might want to.
We could have. We wanted to hold it in the branch, and yeah. So this was the only way to do that. At Miller, at the new Miller branch, we'll have a 3,000-square-foot meeting room space that we'll be able to divide into three to bolster this third pillar. But the third pillar is the community center concept, the cultural center concept, this bringing people together to discuss ideas, the human connection. We will never, ever have a desire to do away with that. That is part of our nature. It is simply part of our quality of life here in Howard County, and we aim to contribute to that in unprecedented ways in the future.
Gee, you think we could do a podcast from there sometime?
Absolutely. Yeah, next week?
That'd be good.
Do one at the library. Yeah, maybe
we have an off week next week, but maybe the following week.
or
in 2 weeks.
Yeah, right. Or when the new one opens.
That'd be great.
Choose Civility is also another way that
she bought Choose Civility stickers.
Have one for you, Dennis, here, and one for you, Paul.
I'm more of a Choose Insanity kind of guy.
Well, you can modify that, because others have, and feel free.
There's several iterations of that.
This is another example of the third pillar of our curriculum.
Wait a minute, we've only got three.
What's that?
Go ahead.
The community center concept, the partnership falls under that third pillar. We are a lead organization. We have 100 alliance partners in Choose Civility, and we just got another donation, so we purchased another 5,000 car magnets. Two of them are right here, so with the 5,000, there will be 65,000 car magnets that we'll have distributed over 3 years.
I know. They were running out of them. I know that some people were stealing Choose Civility stickers off of other cars.
They're high demand.
Which kind of defeats the whole purpose.
I had to buy mine on eBay for like $419. Well, Valerie, you got some tremendous things going on at the library, and I feel like we didn't get to everything we would have wanted. I think Dennis and I spent a little too much time talking about the news this morning, afternoon.
Lots of news going on.
But before I do let you go, Dave Bittner, our producer, wants me to make sure that I ask you if there's a statute of limitations on childhood overdue book fines. He's very concerned because he's got some overdue fines from his childhood. He'd like to apply for a new card, and he's really scared that you might snag him at the door.
He's got that Curious George book that's been sitting in his...
Well, Dave Bittner, part of the manner in which we deliver our mission is with extraordinary customer service. And that means we will believe you, for starters, and then we will happily forgive your fines.
And I will say, as we wrap up, all my interactions with your people at the library, both volunteers and staff, have been wonderful.
Aren't they great?
You got a great team.
Yes, we do.
Valerie, thanks for coming by today, and have a great afternoon.
Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That about wraps up yet another episode of Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, for making us look good on radio, and to General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on April 8th for another Earth Day show with guest Josh Feldmark, the director of the Howard County Office of Environmental Sustainability. We hope you'll join us.